Wonderful and interesting
That's good.
life,
Off we
and
go.
I'd like to get it on tape.
All right, where are we now?
We're at PCW with a new view about Christians.
Well, what happened was that after I was, I wanted to go to, I knew we were going to college. I would have been the first person in my family to go to college. It was a big mistake that Shirley and Esther and, well, David, the brother, had started Carnegie Mellon, but the girls didn't go to college, and that was a big mistake, in my opinion. But so I was to go to college. But my father said, there are wonderful colleges in Pittsburgh. You're not going away to college. Girls shouldn't go away to college. So I went to PCW, and I lived on the campus for one semester because I didn't like that either. So I left that. But I had heard from somebody that Chatham or PCW had a quota, the 10% of the freshman class, only 10% could be Jewish. Well, there just so happened there were 110 people in my freshman class, and there were 11 Jewish girls.
Sounds like a quota to me.
And so I stomped into the office of the admissions director, and I said, I understand there's a quota. I don't want to go to a college with a quota. I never heard of such a thing, blah, blah, blah. And this, of course, was already after the war. This was 1949. And you can't do things like that. And she said, oh, no, you know, that would never be such a thing. That would be, you know, it would be terrible. There were no civil rights laws, but it would be inappropriate and so on and so forth. But there was a quota. So I met a lot of people. I mean, my first experience there, the weekend of freshman orientation, somebody, I don't even remember who, came and she said, oh, Lois, you know, we had eaten lunch at freshman orientation, and she came and she really looked behind me and around me and everything. And I mean, she was looking for my horns. She said, I heard you were Jewish. Are you really Jewish? I never saw a Jew before. I mean, that's what happened.
Is that right?
Yeah. It wasn't a hostile environment.
Yeah.
It was a very comfortable environment, but it was there. Certainly Jews were there. And I was really an academically inclined Jewish person, and some of the other Jewish women in my class were good students, but they were not the people I was closest to in college. There, I certainly gravitated to the people who had academic interests similar to mine, and they were all almost always Christian.
I would think that would have been a good educational experience.
It was a wonderful educational experience.
Just to be with people who were not Jewish and to enjoy them, and, you know, not to live in such a cloistered...
I never felt I lived in a cloistered...
situation.
No, I never felt it was cloistered. Oh, I started to say about Franny Aaron, whose mother went on to become president of the Pittsburgh Board of Education. I was very committed to public education. Now, Franny and I used to have these long talks walking home. Well, she was from a Reformed Jewish family, and she was also from an extremely wealthy Jewish family. And at that, this was in the late 40s, or middle 40s, her parents were involved in something called the American Council for Judaism. My parents were involved in things like the Mizrahi, the Religious Zionist Organization, or the Labor Zionist, the Habonim. And we would talk about, you know, these aspects of Judaism and so on and so forth. But Judaism has always played an important role in my life, but I never really felt segregated or that I didn't feel fit
didn't
in
feel
or something.
No, not until...
Not until
when you,
much later in life.
Okay.
So PCW was a happy time. Those were wonderful 4 years. I was part of the National Student Association. I traveled all around the country to going to other colleges, you know, things like Who's Who in American Colleges, and had wonderful faculty. It was a very small school. There were under 500 students.
Weren't you lucky?
And I think it was an absolutely wonderful
education.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's when I met Milton.
Oh, that's what we want to hear about.
The happiest time of my life. He was a chuppah holder. My friend and neighbor was married at the Fairfax apartment, and they had four poles for the chuppah, which is the way they hold chuppahs in Israel, and now they're doing it in America.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but she didn't have a permanent chuppah there. And so for the ushers were chuppah,
you know,
holders.
I'm lost. Who's getting married?
My neighbor, my friend.
Okay.
Was getting married. And Milt was a chuppah holder, and I was her maid of honor.
And you were what?
Her maid of honor.
Okay.
And he was holding the chuppah behind me. And the way he tells the story is it was very boring. It was a long ceremony. So his eye settled on my tush. I had a cute little tush. So then he asked me out. And all the girls his age were already spoken for. They were all... And so he had to go to the younger ages, and we went out. We actually had met about 2 years before that, when I think I was a freshman in college. A friend had introduced us. I volunteered for one of the social agencies on the Hill, and he was a social worker, and he knew Milton. He had introduced us, and we didn't like each other at all.
Is that right? That's mm-hmm. so romantic.
Is that romantic that we didn't like each other at all? I thought he was kind of sarcastic, and he thought I was very young. I mean, subsequently we found out, but then at the wedding, uh-huh. he thought, I guess pickings were slimmer then.
That you had shaped up.
I don't know.
As it was.
Anyway, so he called next week and said, this is the whoopee holder, and I said, the who? He said, the whoopee holder, and then we laughed, and then the rest is history. So we were married.
Was he a doctor then?
No, he was in medical school.
He was in medical
school. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be married when I graduated, which was June of 53, and he graduated medical school in June of 54, and he thought he should be married when we graduated because his mother wanted him to be married as a doctor. And then we said, well, marriage is a compromise, so we got married in December.
Halfway in between.
And my grandfather had said, and I think this is advice that everyone should have, he said, Lois, I was, again, the first grandchild to be married, and he said, Lois, remember, marriage is 60-40. Isn't that a wonderful thing to say?
Yeah,
sometimes you're 60 and he's 40, and sometimes the other way around.
That's right.
But I had occasion to tell that to young people now, who, particularly young women, who think that it has to be 50-50, you know?
Right.
And it never really is.
He was a wonderful, wise man.
But it was a good family.
That was a good thought.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, where did you? He was in medical school when not quite finished.
That's right, and I graduated in June and taught school. At that time, it was very difficult to get a teaching position in the city. I was on the waiting list for the city to teach history and mm-hmm. social studies, but I got a job in what's now North Allegheny School District. At that time, I forgot the school district it was, but it wasn't consolidated
okay.
in those days,
mm-hmm.
And so I taught school, and he finished medical school.
Mm-hmm. Where did you live?
My Aunt Esther. Did you know Esther?
I did.
And Esther and Uncle George had bought a big house on Darlington Road, and they had a third floor.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have any, well, we had, you know, what teachers made in 1953, teachers made Pennsylvania-based salary was $2,200 a year. Mm-hmm. I think it was $2,150, and I got an extra $50. A year because I was going to lead one of a newspaper club or something,
mm-hmm.
and so I was going to make $2,200 a year, and Milt was in medical school, and so as Esther said that Uncle George, her husband, if we wanted to live in their third floor, they'd fix the apartment for us. So we had the third floor of their house, and it was great. It really was nice.
And then
he interned at the Montefiore Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to Boston. He did his specialty training in Boston. We went to Boston.
What is his specialty?
Hematology.
Is he internal
hematology? Medicine.
Okay. And how long were you in Boston?
We were in Boston a little over 3 years.
3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then what happened?
Well, when I went to Boston, I figured I could teach school anywhere in the world. Although I did apply to teach school in Boston. Now, mind you, this was 1954.
Mm-hmm.
And I applied to teach school in Boston Public Schools, and I had heard that Brookline Public Schools were very good, so I sent an application there. But when we got to Boston, I really didn't want to teach school. I said there were so many other things I could do. I thought I'd like to do something else. So I went into educational publishing. But it's very interesting. This is 1954. The application I got from the Boston Public Schools practically asked me my time of menarche. I mean, it was
your time
of starting my menstrual periods. It was the most invasive application form you could imagine.
Oh, my.
It was the first year, the September of 1954, would have been the first year that the Boston Public Schools would hire a married teacher.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting?
Hmm. I mean, well, they were not married when I went to school.
Teachers
could not be married when I went to school.
In Pittsburgh. Right. But that was 1954.
No,
not at all. So then what if the married teacher got pregnant?
Well, I also felt when I went to school, it was during the Depression, that the men needed the jobs. That if a woman was a teacher and her lived with a man who
had
who had a job, that they were taking a job from someone who had no one. That I think was the reason.
It wasn't the reason. It was not discrimination. But that's another. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was. But whatever. Anyway, so I didn't teach. I went to work for an educational publishing company again, and company, and I edited high school textbooks, history, mm-hmm. social studies textbooks. It was a wonderful experience. Living
in
Boston
it?
Was marvelous. Yes,
you
it did. Was a wonderful yeah. experience.
You lived in Boston and liked that.
I loved it. And Milt's family had a cousin there, and they became kind of our surrogate parents, and then yeah. I got pregnant, and we had Eric, and then I got pregnant the next year, and we had Marion, and so it was just a very happy
time. So how many children do you have?
And then our third child, three, and then our third child was born in Pittsburgh the year we moved back.
All right, we need the names and the birthdays.
Okay, Eric Jacob Michaels was born on October 7th of 1956, and Marion Gail Michaels was born February 26th, 1958. And Jacob Stephen Michaels, who's named after my grandfather.
That's a terrific name.
Was born on December 2nd, 1959. So we had these three children in 3 years and a month or two. We thought that was brilliant family planning.
Oh, wow. You got through with all of that quickly.
Well, in those days you thought if you had children after 30, they'd all be God knows what.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's so crazy. But that's what we thought, and we thought we'd like to have at least five children.
Five?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you quit with three.
I quit with three.
Were you working while you had these children?
I worked in Boston while I had the children. When we came back to Pittsburgh, I did not work. I joined Ladies' Hospital Aid and National Council of Jewish Women, and I took care of my babies and stuff.
So when did you come back to Pittsburgh?
We came back to Pittsburgh in 58.
In 58.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then Milt went into practice on his own with a wonderful physician whose name was Milton Gollum.
Mm-hmm. Mickey Gollum.
Mickey Gollum. Mm-hmm. I told Milt that Milt had had some offers for associations, and he, for a variety of reasons, he chose to go it alone. Because Mickey said, look, you can use my office in the afternoons when I don't have office hours, and your rent can be 10% of whatever you take in.
Oh.
So I think the first month rent was like $11 or something.
That was okay.
It was a very, very wonderful. And then he shared an office with another great internist, Art Heinemann.
Mm-hmm. And Artie Heinemann.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm
mm-hmm.
friends with
Susan.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, for a very short time he was in an association with two mm-hmm. other physicians, two other internists. But ever since then he's been a solo practitioner.
Exactly.
I'm very
well,
happy
he's lucky
that way.
That he can
yeah.
still do that. Mm-hmm. That's
well, we cool. said when everybody was buying the doctor's practices out and everything, they said Milt was a schlepper because he didn't sell his practice. Mm-hmm. And then when everybody was, all those practices were going belly up and everybody was miserable, he became a hero because he didn't sell
smart.
His practice.
Right.
But he's still practicing. He's 72 and he's still happy practicing.
He's still practicing. Mm-hmm. That's great. Where did you live when you came back?
We came back actually and rented a duplex on Darlington Road, like uh-huh. four doors down from where my aunt
is. Where you started.
Where we started.
Uh-huh.
And then we bought a house on Hampton Street in the East End.
Uh-huh.
And our children all went to, they went to Fulton School and Peabody High School.
Mm-hmm.
And that, then we moved into this house after they went to college.
Mm-hmm. And, could you tell us about your children now? Is any of them married?
Yes, my oldest son Eric is married to a wonderful young woman who he met at the University of Pennsylvania. Her name is Carol Rothstein Michaels. When they were married, she had gone to Wharton School, and so she was a bond broker on Wall Street, and she really was supporting the family. Well, he went to law school,
mm-hmm.
and they were married. And he is a practicing lawyer. He's a tax attorney. And he has a small law firm.
Where?
In Florham Park, New Jersey. And they live in Short Hills, New Jersey with my two perfect grandchildren, now aged 12 and 10, Jonathan David Michaels and Laura Sophie Michaels.
Okay.
And my second child, Marion Michaels, is a physician. She went to the University of Pennsylvania Medical School. She went to Yale undergraduate school. She's a single woman, and she... after having studied in Philadelphia and in Great Britain and in Africa and in Israel,
oh, wow.
she, of all places, is in Pittsburgh Children's Hospital.
Oh, aren't you lucky?
Yeah, we're very fortunate
okay.
and very happy, and we think Children's Hospital is happy, but they attracted her.
Is she a pediatrician?
She's a pediatrician in infectious disease.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And your last?
My third son is Jacob Michaels, and he's also a single person and lives in Lockport, New York, and works for an automotive company called Delphi Corporation. And very interesting. He went to Carnegie Mellon University as an undergraduate mathematics student. Mathematics was his love, and but decided he did not want to be, when he graduated he CMU, he didn't want to go to graduate school, and he didn't want to be a math teacher. He didn't want to do a lot of things. What he wanted to do was join the United States Marine Corps. So he joined the United States Marine Corps and became commissioned and commissioned officer, and then served his tour of duty around the world, and then went into the reserves, got an MBA, went to work for General Motors Company, went into the reserves. His reserve company in Ohio, when he was living in Ohio, was called up. He was in Desert Storm. He took 203 young people. He was the commanding officer of this reserve unit. Took 203 young people to Saudi Arabia, and he said he came back with 203 3/4.
Oh, somebody got pregnant. Right. Oh, that's a wonderful ending.
But he's a very, very special young man.
He must be.
And of course, it was a big shock to all of us because how many Jewish Marines do you know? And but my mother always said, "So you'll have a son a lawyer, a daughter a doctor, and a son a general."
Not bad at all.
No, he's a major. He holds the rank of major.
That's amazing. Really is. He came back with everybody. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, after your children, we know pretty much about them. We want to know about you. Tell us what you've done. When you were through raising the babies, you had a lot of community activities.
Well, I was doing all this during while I was raising them. I was president of Ladies Hospital Aid when I was 33 years old.
You were what?
I think 31.
When you were president of the hospital aid?
33. Well, I was president of hospital aid. I went to graduate school.
Oh, tell us about that, Lois. Where did you go?
I went to the School of Public Health.
At Pitt.
When we came back to Pittsburgh, one of the physicians who had been an administrator at the hospital where Milt was in Boston, his name was Cecil Sheps, came to Pittsburgh to lead the program in hospital administration at the School of Public Health, and he needed an editor. And his brother had worked with Milt in Boston and remembered that I had been an editor. So he asked me to do some editing work for him at the School of Public Health. And this is when I had these three babies. And so that must have been in 1959. It was the year Jay was born. So it must have been 1960 because Jay was born December 59. So in 60, he asked me if I would do some editing. So I did some editing for him. And then he thought it would be a good idea if I would get a degree in healthcare administration. He knew I was interested in history, and I was interested in the history of hospitals, particularly interested in the history of Jewish hospitals, because I was very involved in hospital aid at that time. So they had fellowships and traineeships at that time, and I took a traineeship and I got my master's in 63.
From the public school. That light is flickering on and off.
Is that what it is? Do you think it's going to burn out? Maybe I better shut it.
Well, you have that thing on. Don't forget.
Oh, well, if it doesn't bother you.
No. I mean, if it's going to burn out, let it burn out.
Yeah, I don't want it to explode or anything. Well, we've had some dripping in the ceiling, so I don't want it to be water. But you don't think so. All right. I finished graduate school in 63, and then I stayed on, and I had an academic appointment.
With him?
In the healthcare administration. I never really wanted to be a hospital administrator. The only thing Milt has never said anything about career-wise or anything, except he didn't want me to be a hospital administrator. He felt that was just, that with his being a physician, he just didn't feel that was the right thing to do.
Right.
So I stayed on at the university and worked there in research projects.
How old were you when you were doing this?
Well, if I got my degree in 63 and I was born in 31, I was 32.
Okay. And you were also active at the same time that you were getting a degree and working, you were active with hospital aid?
I was active with hospital aid.
Boy.
And But I didn't become president of Hospital Aid until 66, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was 35 when I was president of Hospital Aid. But that's pretty young,
that's
I guess.
That's very young. You had to have offered them a lot of yourself in order to be asked to be president, I think.
Well, I was involved. But see, my mother said that, if you're married to a doctor, you have to be president of Hospital Aid. I mean, that's what my mother said. So
that's what you did.
Well, that's what I did. Yeah. That's what I was supposed to do. So.
Well, that's the way it was.
Doctor's wives. Yeah.
Well, the rabbi's wife was active in the temple. Now the rabbi's wife has her own career and doesn't even show up. But that's the way it was in a certain era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I really had, in terms of professional life, I've had a very happy
life. You got an early start on it.
Well, like my mother said, she was a single woman before it was fashionable. Single mother before it was fashionable. She played tennis before it was fashionable, and I became a professional woman
before it was fashionable.
We've always been doing things out of sync. But what happened was that when we moved to the big house, when we bought the house on Hampton Street, it was one of those great, big, old, wonderful Pittsburgh houses, mm-hmm. and I had essentially three babies. Mm-hmm. And my mother said, "Oh, Lois," she said, "this is terrible." And she came home. My brother raised collie dogs, and she came home from the kennel one Sunday afternoon and called me, and she said, "I have just what you need." And I was thinking, what I needed was a hot bath, and I needed to be able to go to the bathroom without three kids hanging around. You know? And I said, she says, "We met so and so's sister, the people that owned the kennel." And she worked for a family that moved to Florida, so we hired her for you. And she'll be at your house on Monday morning, and you'll pay her $25 a week. And she'll stay until Friday afternoon. Her sister will pick her up and bring her in on Monday mornings and take her home on Friday evenings. And she has big bosoms. This is my mother, my wonderful mother. She has big bosoms, so she'll be very nice to the children, and she'll clean the house and so on and so forth. So Elizabeth came to live with us. And she did. She had big bosoms, and she was very sweet. And she taught our kids all about dairy farming and so on and so forth. And she cleaned the house. But I had a lot of energy, and that was that's what enabled me to do a lot of things, like go to school and stuff. Because, and I do try to tell that to young working women in the years that since I've been older. Is they really can't do everything. And I was able to accomplish a lot because I didn't clean toilets, I didn't clean the refrigerator, I didn't do windows, I practically didn't do the laundry.
And it was affordable.
$25 a week.
I mean, because it's not affordable to do it anymore, to have that kind of care, in the house.
It is so expensive, I think.
You mean now?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess you'd have to figure out what was $25 to our income in those days.
People had a lot of help that couples, are struggling. A lot of couples are still having that help. But I think it's a bigger
chunk of the proportionally.
Of their money.
And also, there was I don't know how this is sounding, but there was a servant class, I suppose.
Well,
Elizabeth,
that's why it was cheaper.
It's Elizabeth had a career. I had a career. Now, she was treated as though she had a career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was paid promptly. Her Social Security was paid. She had paid vacations. We put away money for her.
I mean, you pay a babysitter now minimum wage. Teenage babysitter. Theoretically, you should be paid. My neighbors are paying minimum wage.
Well,
that's a lot of money.
My sister went to New York. My sister went to New York with her, see her daughter, Marcia's daughter, and they went to Manhattan. The babysitter was $70.
That's what I'm saying. So it is a different. It's different money.
It's the same way that housing today is just so different than it was then. It really mm-hmm. was. Everyone could afford to buy a home ultimately, but today it's really a tremendous. Not in Pittsburgh necessarily, mm-hmm. but in other mm-hmm. cities, it's exorbitantly expensive.
Well, I think that was a big factor in my being able to pursue community activities as well as professional activities. And then when Elizabeth left after 9 or 11 years, I had just started working. I had taken a paid job after all my volunteer years. So that mm-hmm. must have been, Elizabeth came when we moved there in 61. So that must have been, it was 71.
Mm-hmm.
I had taken a job with something called Health and Welfare Planning Association, which was the United Way agency. They were doing a planning, they were doing a community survey. I was very interested in it and had chosen I could do this, and I was ready to work outside the home, but on a part-time basis.
It was part-time.
Mm-hmm. It was on a part-time basis. And that's when Elizabeth she became ill, and it was necessary for her to retire. So there are wonderful stories there where I tried to hire somebody to live in, and we had a wonderful apartment there and so on and so forth. Finally found somebody who we were going to hire to live in, and she wanted her daughter to see her apartment and to meet the family. She came over. She had been recently widowed and had and felt that she didn't want to stay in her house and whatever. And she was a very lovely woman. And when she brought her daughter over, her daughter thought the family was great and the apartment was great that she was going to live in, and the hours and the salary was good and so on. That it was a lot more than $25 a week by then, but I don't remember what it was. And as she left, she took my hands and she said, "Oh, Mrs. Michaels, I am so glad. I am so looking forward to coming Monday, and my daughter just knows I'm going to be happy here. I'm going to be so happy here." And like I told my daughter, thank God the Michaels aren't Jewish.
Oh, my God. Oh, isn't that awful? Oh.
I said, "Oh, you are very much mistaken. We are very much Jewish." I mean, she didn't know anything about Jewish, except she didn't want to work for a Jewish family. And I said, "I don't think you'll be happy here at all." So then I decided I was going to give up working. And then I got because I was going to downtown to work on the 3 days I was working, coming home to give the kids lunch because they went to a school where they walked home, you know, naturally for lunch, which is a good thing to do. Excuse me just a second. Hello?
Well, we're finished.
I do like to talk a lot, don't I?
No, it's wonderful, though. It's just wonderful.
The last person we interviewed was very dry.
It was so hard.
We didn't get anything besides basics.
It was awful, and it was an awful interview. A wonderful person, just a lovely, courteous man, just delightful. But he was a lawyer, and he only answered the questions. He never said another thing, and it was
when we said, "Tell us about your wife," you got a name, and that was it.
You didn't even tell us her name for quite a while. When were you married? He never gave us the name. We had to ask him his wife's name.
So I would come home at lunchtime, give the kids lunch, and then I go back downtown.
That's tough.
And that was not very much fun, so I decided this is the end of this. Mm-hmm. I am quitting my job. And the phone rang from an employment agency, and she said, "Mrs. Michaels, you're still looking for a full-time housekeeper. Would you consider someone who didn't live in?" And I said, I can't. I'm not considering anybody. I don't need anybody anymore." And I'm like, "That I can't. I'm leaving for work." And she said, "Well, this woman is wonderful, and she needs a job, and I can highly recommend her. And she has a car, and she's at my office. It was in East Liberty, and she can be at your house in 4 minutes." And I said, "Well, if she's not here in 4 minutes, I'm out of here." Anyway, it's like 3 minutes later, the doorbell rang, and this really very attractive-looking middle-aged woman came to the door, and she said, "I'm Blanche Spear. Are you Mrs. Michaels?" I said, "Yes." I said, and she said, "Well, I've come about the job." And the kids were dashing off to school. You know how kids dash off to school, and they practically knocked her over. They ran out of the house. I said, "Well, you can see I have 3 very active children. I have this great big house. I have 3 full bathrooms." I said, "We don't do anything. We're a very sloppy family. We're used to having help." I said, "It's, you know, and I want to go to work, and Dr. Michaels is never home." And she said, "Well, where do you keep your aprons?" By this time, we were in the kitchen. And I said, "Well, I think they're in that drawer. Maybe they're in that drawer." Well, she opened up a drawer, found an apron. She's putting the apron on. Do you know, I walked out of my house that day, and she worked for us for 31 years.
She stayed with you for 31 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Oh. She's an extraordinary woman, absolutely wonderful. Oh. And she's on a... Her name is Blanche Spear, S-P-E-A-R.
Is she Jewish?
No, she's Jewish. She's a woman of color. And when my mother died, she was the first person over here when we came back from Florida with a passel of Southern Fried Chicken that could fed the, you know, the family for a couple of nights. Yes, a wonderful, wonderful woman. And she's on a monthly pension, and she, you know, checks up on us. She's 80, what is she? She's 83, I think. She said, "When I retire, she retires."
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were both lucky. So, that's terrific. Is that it?
Well, we have 2 minutes less, you know,
okay.
1-2 minutes, so we could.
I hate to start a new thing. Lois, would you like us to come back?